What's going on, guys? This is Billy Alvarado, the Unstoppable BA, and you're listening to episode number 41 of Unstoppable REI Wealth. Today, I'm interviewing Dan Austin, a former Army Ranger of 8 years, who's currently working full-time while still flipping, wholesaling, and has a rental portfolio of over 25 doors. This guy and his partner are bringing in over six figures a month on the side. Now, if you want to understand what it takes to get a business up and running while you have a family, a kid that's 3 years old, going to school to get your MBA, working 40 plus hours a week, and getting your real estate investment business not just started, but started and scaled in a relatively short amount of time, you're not going to want to miss this episode. It's not hype at all. This is 42 minutes of solid gold. I hope you enjoy it.
Welcome to Unstoppable Real Estate Investing Wealth. My name is Billy Alvaro, a.k.a. the Unstoppable BA, former billion-dollar mortgage banker, gone bankrupt, turned professional real estate investor, where each week you'll learn the tools, strategies, systems, and secrets myself and other highly successful real estate investing entrepreneurs use to start, grow, and scale their businesses, creating massive profits, and how you can too. And we'll teach you how to put those profits to work so you no longer have to. Get ready to finally experience financial freedom and generational wealth. Now let's get started.
What is going on, guys? Billy Alvaro back with another episode of Unstoppable REI Wealth. I don't know if you guys can see that are watching the video. I got some welts all over my face. I did not get into a fight, I can assure you. What I did is I'm over 50 years old, so I'm getting Botox, baby. I am bouncing my face with Botox, trying to keep this youngest looking alive. So the guy who I'm interviewing today, by the way, speaking about welts on the face, this guy is his background. He's an Army Ranger. I'm going to be interviewing today Dan Austin from, you're in Washington, Dan, correct?
Yep, that's right. Yep.
Dan, first off, welcome to the show. You and I had spoken prior to you coming on, and good story. Love what you're doing, and I think you're going to be able to share a lot of great information with people who are in that process where they want to do this full-time, right? Like, you're doing it full. Yeah. You're actually not doing it full-time. We're going to get to that story. You went from Army Ranger to college to work, and for the last X amount of years, you've been doing this side hustle, but you're doing it at such a level where you guys are like, you're crushing it in what you're doing. So let's get a little bit of background, Dan, and introduce yourself to the audience.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thanks for that. So yeah, Dan Austin, started out of high school as went in the Army. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. College really wasn't a thing at the time for me, and jumped in. So from 2004 to 2012, I was pulling overseas, kind of grinding it out, doing the wartime stuff. And
you were an Army Ranger, correct?
Yep. Did that. And so tons of awesome lessons. I actually really liked it. I mean, there was a lot of hardships and all that stuff, being in the military and being in a, you know, special operations unit, constantly being deployed and doing those things. But the levels of things that I learned that I've carried into my business are phenomenal, right? I carry them with me every day. I think about it all the time. And so, you know, even though I loved it, there was this kind of thing for me in my head. I was like, you know, I do want to get a college degree, be the first in my family to do it. So I left the military, kind of, let's figure it out. And I chose electrical engineering. I had no idea why, other than heard it was hard to do. And I figured I'd be a better employee and, you know, I'd be more employable with a degree like that. And so graduated with that and went to work, you know, here in my hometown at a local electric and gas utility, which is where I still work today. So I've been there 8 years now. It's been great. It is a good job, great company. I have a lot of good friends there, which is also why it's hard for me to leap out of the W-2. It's like, oh, really? I actually kind of like my job. It's kind of fun, and I enjoy it. But
I bet you enjoy making deals happen a lot more than your W-2
job. It's way more fun, right? And one deal, I can make my monthly salary like that, like no problem, right? And so you start adding that up. You're like, okay, one deal to make my monthly salary, and it's not hard to do one deal a month. It really is not. Correct. And so it definitely changes. My partner and I laugh all the time. It changes your perspective on money, right? You know, some people are worried about, you know, selling their house and having like a $500, you know, oh, they want me to make a $500 repair. Like, who cares? Like, pay them $1,000 and just sell the damn house, right? Like it's just, it changes your mind on the velocity of money and how to make money. But yeah, right when I started at my W-2, I met one of my best friends and mentors today. Somebody told me, oh, he's investing in real estate. And I immediately like looked over the cubes, like, who is this guy? I walked over to him, introduced myself right away and started, just chatting him up and learning from him. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to invest in real estate. And this was back in like 2013, 2014. And I basically was like, let's do this. And then I moved for my job and kind of put it on hold, which in hindsight, I should have just been doing it virtually or buying every house in the town I moved into. But I was kind of locked in this mindset. I want to buy and hold and the town I want to live in. And anyhow, so moved back to Spokane in 2016 and right away bought my first rental property in 2016, converted it to a student rental. It's right across from a local university here. So it's just a perfect student rental. And then in late 2017, the lady next door had passed away and the family approached me to buy the house. So I was like, sure, I got it off market. It's my first off market deal. And I got it at a great discount and renovated that thing top to bottom, converted it to a student rental. And both these are awesome. They're kind of the gems in my portfolio. I keep them. They're for my daughter when she graduates high school and all that. And, you know, the cash flow $1,000 a month and they're just awesome, right?
Very good.
Love it. But then I started looking on the MLS and trying to find deals and I couldn't. I wanted to scale. I wanted to get at least 10 of these things and it just wasn't working. And so another good friend of mine that I actually met in college, he had recently just quit his job, just left. He was an electrical engineer as well, left his job and had started doing some flips and had a few properties in his portfolio. And he's like, hey, I know it's hard to find deals on the MLS right now. What if we like go off market? I got this idea. And essentially he was pitching me a wholesaling business. And I was like, sure. And I told my wife, I still remember the conversation. I was like, what's the worst that can happen? We invest 20, 30 grand in this thing and we lose it. Like, that's okay. Like, I mean, at least we tried. Right.
Right.
And so late 2019, we came together, started working on this business model, joined a mastermind, started learning, which was huge to scale, was getting around people that are doing the same thing. And then our first batch of marketing, I still remember this, hit March 2020. So like COVID, you know, just starting to blow up. And we were too dumb at the time. We didn't know that everybody else was kind of figuring it out, pivoting and doing things. So we just kept marching through. And looking back on it, was the right thing to do. And we've done tons of wholesale deals, some fix and flips since then, scaled our portfolio quite a bit with some good rental properties. And now we just finished our test market for a virtual wholesaling market. And we're getting ready to go full scale there and step into some other virtual markets as well. So we're definitely in that scale phase right now. We're growing and we're getting there.
Yeah. So you guys are like really new with this whole entire model. Like this is a year and a half old.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. We definitely hit the ground running. Yeah.
Big time. Yeah. So tell us the model now. So you have fix and flip, you're doing wholesale and you're doing buy and hold with the Burr method.
Yes. Yeah. We don't
get to each one of those.
Yeah. Yeah. So our main intention when we started the wholesale side of things was like buy the best, wholesale the rest. But we also like wholesaling is a lot of fun too. And buy and hold takes time. It takes resources. So we really are just kind of peeling off the best. And we only got into fix and flip because we had some months where like, we're like, whoa, we're not wholesaling as much. What if it stops? Like, okay, let's increase our profits, which, you know, you can, if you can acquire it off market and then you can do it from, you know, soup to nuts on a flip. And I have my broker's license as well. So, you know, it was easy for us to list these. And really that's not we don't love fix and flipping because it's just not where we want to be, but we do it. But typically it's, market, find the deals, analyze them, and then figure out what we want to do with them. And if it's fits into our buy box, it's definitely ours. Like if it's a small multi, we're keeping it, you know, duplexes, triplexes, stuff like that. If it's a single family home, depends on what it is, we'll keep it as a rental, burr it. And we've been fortunate. We've been able to cash out on a burr all of our rehab funds on everything we've done and plus some a lot of the times. So we're definitely keeping the best. Yeah, exactly. And that's where you make your money, right? When you buy it. And so the thing with fix and flips is like we were talking about earlier, is it's just the contractor piece. We haven't dialed in our construction piece. And we've talked about starting a construction business. But when you're in this phase of where everything is growing, it's just so hard to get your arms around it all and grow it all at the same time.
You need to pick and choose which section of your business you're going to put your focus on. Because when you come out of the gates, you're trying to focus on four or five or six different pieces of your company at one time. Very little thing, nothing's really happening the right way, right? So if you take all your energies and focus on one segment, one piece for a quarter or a half a year and pound that thing, get it systematized, get the right people put in place, and then always hand it over to somebody who could oversee and run it and then turn your focus on to the next piece, you'll get there. But I made the mistake too early on. I tried to focus on everything at one time and nothing got done great. It's like
right, exactly
getting done, but nothing was getting done great. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? It wasn't until I put my blinders on and I started focusing on one small segment at a time that I was able to structure it, systematize it, put the right people in place, and then really scale it. It's a pain in the ass because it's slow.
Yes.
Right. But its focus is where it's at on specific things inside your business.
Yep. Especially with a new business too. Everything is shiny object syndrome, right? Like everything is like, oh, that could be new revenue. That's more revenue. Let's take that on. And then all of a sudden you're too spread. And then I'll throw it on top of that with me working a W-2 job. You know, I've got 40 hours a week committed to that. If I pulled that out, then yeah, maybe I could really focus on building a construction side of our business or building out more markets and those sorts of things.
Yeah. So I want to get into that. So why, what made you stay in, well, before I get into what made you stay, I want you to talk to the people who are listening on what it takes to actually get a side hustle up and running when you're working a 40, 50 hour work week. So what does it take to make that happen?
Yeah. So I would say, so there's easier ways and harder ways to do it, right? It's a lot of work. It is a lot of effort, but you know, it's not like I'm not working until midnight every night. I'm not doing that. It's about being efficient. It's about using your systems. And it's kind of about like the book, Who Not How. Yeah. Being okay, we should have hired our ACK manager way sooner than we did. It took us a while to hire an acquisitions manager. And since then, our sales have gone up way better. I mean, they're so much better, more consistent.
Yeah, because it's focusing only on that one thing.
Exactly. Then we hired a leads manager. And oh my God, our follow-up turned, it's 10 times better. Then we hired a project manager. We've got VAs. And as you, so if you can do that, I mean, you can get a VA in the Philippines that just is a rock star that can take a lot of that, the minutia of the business out of it, right? All that like little just busy work. You have so much busy work, especially when you're marketing, you've got data that you're trying to keep clean. You've got return to sender mail. You've got all these things that you should be doing to make your business better. But you just, if you're doing it yourself, you can't actually keep growing the business. You can't network and you can't build your buyers list and do all these important things for your, to keep your business moving. And so I would say too, one of the biggest benefits we've had is find like-minded people that are doing what you're doing. Get out in the local community, go to your REI meetups and meet these people. And then for us, join a group. I mean, you can find masterminds out there that are teaching this stuff, you know, for pretty cheap, honestly. It's just like spend the money to get some coaching on it, get some mentorship, do whatever you can to do that. And it's not even just about that person that's teaching you. It's about the group that's joined that mastermind. So for us, we have really good friends across the country. We've JV deals with them and like seeing what they're doing. And then we can match what we're doing in our market. And that's the biggest piece, but it doesn't make it easy. It's still tough because you're flipping and flopping back and forth between a W-2 job and an entrepreneurship, which are two totally different types of mindsets. One is like you go work for the man. The other is like you are the man and you have to make it work. And that's something you need to focus on.
How you fit that in though, into your, do you have kids or no?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I have a 3.5-year-old. Yeah.
And you have a wife. Yep. You're juggling a family. Yep. You're juggling a full-time company that you're working for. You're trying to build out this business. So I want people to understand the mindset of what it takes in here and then what it takes, the sheer power of what you have to put out in order to make this happen. Like, are you just willy-nilly and coming in and trying to figure things out? Or are you blocking out time where you're putting in focus to drive and build this business? Talk about that.
That's
a lot of work.
Yeah. And so I'll even step back a little bit more just to kind of explain that it is doable. So when we first started our wholesale business, I was working full time. I was also getting my MBA from University of Washington. So I was in a full time program and I had like a 9-month-old daughter. Right. Yeah. And, you know, and so all these things were piled up. That was everything. And it was a mess at first. But it's time blocking, right? It's waking up early, getting certain things done. Hey, I've got an hour and a half here to do this before I have to jump to this meeting. And then it's recognizing like when you close one, you got to like, I close my laptop for work and it's like, this is what I'm focusing on. And then it's also building that schedule for your family too, of like, okay, hey, which I didn't do very good in the beginning, right? Like, hey, from this time to this time or this day to this time, I have to do these things. And this is what it's going to do. Because if I don't, then I'm failing my partner, right? Yeah. I'm failing my business. And that honestly is more important. And then figuring out how to literally, it's like a mental, for me, it's like a mental separation between them. When I, like I said, closing the laptops, right? Like, which one am I closing? And saying, okay, this Friday afternoon, I'm going to go pick my daughter up from daycare and we're going to go do stuff. But then when I get home, open the laptop up, I'm going to do these three things. And like, I have my planner here on my desk with like, these are the absolute things I have to do today, and literally prioritizing things. It's not like willy nilly, like you said, because if you, yeah. I did do that in the beginning, I did that and nothing was getting done, right? Yep. Oh, I've got these leads to follow up with. Like, that's my least favorite thing to do. Guess what? I'm not doing it. Right. And so if you prioritize it, though, what you have to do and just do it, then it happens. And then the things that I don't like to do, I can hire out somebody that's a kick-ass person to do that. And being willing to hire those people out was probably one of the biggest ways for us to grow our business so much, so much faster.
So in a year and a half, when did you hire your first employee or virtual employee?
Yeah. So we hired our first hire was an acquisitions manager, and that was probably about 8 months, 10 months into our business. And she came in, kicked ass, and then kind of fell off and didn't really do well for us. So we had to kind of pivot away from her. And I'll step back. We did hire a VA probably 4 or 5 months into it. And that was like our first true hire. But we weren't using him to his full capacity yet. Now we've got him dialed in doing a lot of stuff. But yeah, our first like true, like what we would call like in the business person was our ACT manager.
Yeah. I mean, look, you hit on a lot of points in regards to setting this thing up and making it happen. Time blocking and is one of the most important. Setting up your goals, another key, the most important. But you said something interesting in regards to shutting your laptop. I don't know if you actually shut your laptop or is that was just a visual that you did. But I know what I do, you know, there's a book, Dr. Maxwell Maltz, and he teaches in that book, like, clear your calculator. I was able to get myself going where I wanted to go. And I had a million things running at one time. I would have to bring forward the item that I wanted to focus on. And that's all that was in my mind's picture. And I would just focus on that one thing until I needed to shut the laptop or shut it down. Yep. And then I would literally take it and it would go in the back of my head and disappear until I needed to retrieve it again. And if you have the ability to focus, it comes down to one word, man, focus. Yep. Plan, execute, and focus. If you can do that while having a full-time job and a 3.5-year-old and going to school and having a wife, like, if you did it, Dan, other people can do it. I want people to realize that it's 100% possible to do well in this business and to get yourself started. Getting started is probably one of the hardest things people have to do. But once you get that start, that wind, you start to get momentum. Yep. And once you get momentum, like, magic starts to happen because you realize there is 24 hours in a day. Everybody has the same 24. But if you kind of like structure your day that's going to serve you best, you can get a lot of shit done.
Yep. Yeah.
And it doesn't only have to be you. It could be your partner. It could be your VAs. It could be, you know, who, not how. You could have somebody else do this for you. But every single day, your business could slowly get that momentum and slowly start to build without you having to put in $80, $90, $100 a week.
Yes. And Billy, what you're saying is like, I'm just like shaking my head like, yep. And it's that focus. I didn't have that when we first started. And it was like stressful, like it all over the place. But that's what I have to do. When you go back to like the time blocking, it's like, okay, this hour, this is what I'm focusing on. Nothing else. Cause your phone's ringing. I have two laptops ringing. It's like, if I can't say, shut those distractions off, then you're not going to even produce quality work anyways in whatever you're doing. And, you know, I want to always be doing the best that I can in these, right? They're highly important, but it's like that laser focus isn't so important. And I would speak to like hiring, like we were so nervous about hiring. We're like, well, do we have enough money to hire somebody? It's like, that's an investment in your business. And even if you're just paying them for a while and they're not producing revenue for you yet, they will, right? Like, you know, if it's a VA for $500 a week, that's nothing, right? If it's an ACT manager that you can put on full commission, that's even better, right? They're going to do stuff and they're going to produce, but think about it as you're buying an asset for your business.
People don't look at it though. Like, they don't look at it as an investment. They look at it as a burn. I'm losing money. I'm putting out all this money. I'm not seeing anything.
Yep.
And it takes time. Like, if you do this consistently over time, it's the compound effect. Eventually, it's going to start to pay off dividends.
Yes.
And all that hard work that you put in, that investment that you put in for whatever employee, as long as they're the right person for the seat,
sure,
you're going to start to get a return on your investment. It could take 3 months, could take 6 months, could take months, could be a year. But if you're consistent with it, now a lot of people get afraid, like, well, I don't have enough money to, you know, to do this if I can't afford to, you know, I can't afford to pay my mortgage and hire somebody else. So what do you say to somebody like that if they're starting out, like, I don't have the money? I know Dan's saying it's easy, but I don't have $500 a week to start putting out there. What do you say to that?
Yeah, I empathize. I get it. That's where we were at. We're like, man, that's tough. And that was also part of like why I kept my W-2 job, was because I wanted to be able to pay my mortgage. And so if that gives you comfort, do it until it's, until you realize it's just a crutch, which like for me, the W-2 job is just a crutch. But I would say like, believe in yourself, because if you believe in yourself enough to like, I think I'm going to do this, like keep believing in yourself, because you are the one that's going to make it work. You can't say an employee is going to make your business successful, but you can help make that employee successful. So, you know, just like you spend money on anything else with conviction, like just do it with conviction and go with it.
Let me ask you a question. And this is, and I want a real answer, right?
Yeah.
Do you think anybody is capable of going out and being an entrepreneur and starting something? Do you think it really does take a special individual? I want your, because I'm going to give mine. Yeah. I want your honest view.
I think this is a weird answer, but I think anybody can do it, but not everybody will. Because I think I'm not the smartest person out there. I don't have a unique idea. I'm just doing what other people are doing, right? Like you could go and start a business that copies other people and you can make money. Now being super successful at something's maybe a different discussion, but
yeah,
I think anybody can, if they have the ability to work and to focus and to just have conviction and believe in what they're doing, not everybody will.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I think there's a certain cloth, people are cut from a certain fabric that have the ability to do this no matter what. And there's others who I think they'll add a good amount of flavor to an entrepreneur's network. Like you have people that are working with you, and I'm sure there's some very smart people on your team, but they have no desire to go out there, and they don't have, and some of them don't have the stomach for it, because it takes a little bit of crazy to do this business to do any business full time. You have to be a little bit of crazy, because it's filled with a lot of ups and downs. It's not a straight path going all the way up. You have to have emotional fiber to handle the negatives, the crap that hits the wall, and things that go sideways. And a lot of people, when they get into something and they hit that first roadblock, and it like knocks them over a little bit, like, I can't do this. I'm going right back to my W-2 and getting a regular job. And I understand, look, we need all different people in walks of life, right? I mean, you can't just have a world full of entrepreneurs.
Nobody be doing anything. Yeah. Well, that, you know, Billy, that is a good point. And I think about it because, you know, just me, I'm more of a conservative person. My partner is the opposite, right? So I've partnered up with somebody that kind of balances that out. However, I think about my time in the military, there's just so many bad things, good things, wins and losses. And you just have to have grit, and you have to have a little bit of, you got to be a little bit of a risk taker to, you know, jump out of an airplane into combat, right? There's something in there. And I think through my 8 years in the military, I was able to build that. And so I do take that for granted, that not everybody has that, where I think, oh, well, I'm just like everybody else. But now I look back and I'm like, well, I have a lot of times where I've done things where I've had to stress myself. And then you can stress yourself a little bit more over time. As an entrepreneur, that's what you're always doing. You know, you've got to be able to, you have to be willing to watch that bank account tick down almost to zero and know that you're going to make it work to come back up, right? That for not very many people can handle that.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Let's get into your partnership. What's your partner's name?
Yeah. His Mike DeHaan. Yep.
Mike. And so tell us about how you guys separated your roles. What's the roles inside the company?
Yeah, so it was kind of all over the place in the beginning. We were both kind of just trying to do everything. And now what I'm doing, I focus mostly on kind of the rehabs, the properties, the management, kind of stabilizing things, right? So if you think about it this way, he's on the sales side. He typically runs our sales team. And the minute they get something under contract, it goes to escrow. It dings me and I'm on top of it. Now I'm taking it. I'm running the refinances on properties. I'm running the contractors, all that sort of stuff. He's doing most of the dispos on all the wholesale side of things, pretty much. So you can look at it as just acquisitions with him. And now, though, we're pivoting because we're hiring the right people to where we're both going to be running sales teams now, because we're starting to see that's where we want to grow our business. Yep. And we can hire out the project manager position. We can hire out somebody to manage our properties. You know, all that stuff it's not the most valuable use of my time. We're kind of hiring that out, and we're both going to start building our sales teams and continue to build more and more sales teams until we can get that kind of sales manager going for us.
Yeah. Are both you guys visionary, both you guys implementers, combination thereof? Like,
yeah, I would say we're both definitely visionaries. My partner is really, he's probably more the visionary than I am. And I'm more of an integrator. Like, you give me stuff and I'm like, okay, let's systematize this. Like, let's build this out. Let's build this process. He tells me that's the corporate in me, right? I want to systematize it and make it pretty and move forward and like try to catch all the loose ends, where he's like throwing tons of stuff, right? Keeps throwing it in the bucket and thinking like really big, right? And moving forward with his visions and that sort of stuff. But we both definitely, being entrepreneurs, having a desire to run our own business, you have to be a little bit of a visionary.
Oh yeah, for sure. So, but it's, you know, it's an important fact that you just said, important point. When you have a partner, two people in a relationship, and one has that more integrator person, the other has that more visionary, that's a marriage made in heaven.
Sure.
I mean, yeah. Dude, that, like, your company could literally take off. It's something that a lot of entrepreneurs who are strictly visionary suffer, because they have all the great ideas, they have all these things they want to accomplish, but they don't have that person who could actually integrate it and systematize it into the business, because it's a different mindset. You have to have a very organized, very structured mindset to take an idea and to put it into business to actually get it to the next level.
Absolutely.
So that mindset that you have, that's great. That's why you guys have grown in a year and a half, because you have two different mindsets working on one business, which is exponential growth.
Sure. Absolutely. I 100% agree.
So let me ask you this. You're Army Ranger. I mean, yep. Dude, you got balls, right? You've been through training. I'm sure, you know, not just physical training, but a lot of mind training to get you to understand what needs to happen when you're in combat, how you have to deal with things. Why do you still have your W-2 job?
Yeah, that's a good question. For me, I think it's been two-part, right? Like I said earlier, I actually have liked my W-2 job. Like, I never started in real estate thinking I just want to quit my job. Like, that wasn't something that was in my mind. But then the other part is it is kind of that security blanket. Yeah, we're, you know, 18 months into this, and now we're starting to see it grow. Like, oh my gosh, we actually built something that does create money. But I'm hoping to move away from that, because that W-2 job is really not, it's losing its value, I guess is what I'm saying. But it's taken me longer to see that than some people. Like I said, my business partner, he built his parachute on the way down, right?
Yeah.
And part of it too for me is
visionary, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. Right. For me too, part of it is like my responsibilities having a kid. And I don't want to use that as an excuse why I'm not like, hey, I can grow a business, but you know, my kid's keeping back. Like, that's not the excuse. It's just that's where my mind's been. And I'm in this like mental pivot of like, it doesn't have to be that way, right? I mentioned earlier when we were talking, I joined GoBundance this year because that's my goal, is to be around more and more people that can help me cross that chasm of not having that. And it's probably how I grew up too, you know, coming from humble beginnings. Like, you build a nest egg and you're like, I don't want to give this up. What if I lose it, right? And so it's 100% mental though. Like, you're right. It's right here and it's unlocking that. And I'm doing everything I can right now to unlock that, because that's where I'm going and that's my vivid vision. That's my goal. I'm going to be there.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a matter of time. I can see it in your face. It's just eventually, I don't know if it's going to be 6 months or a year, you're going to be out and you're going to be doing this full time. Sure. For sure.
Yeah, that's my goal.
For sure. Talk to the listeners on how you guys are scaling your business with marketing, right? We all know marketing is the lifeblood of every business. Without leads coming in, you don't have appointments. Without appointments, you don't have contracts. Yep. So what are you doing, you and your partner, to grow your business, to do, you know, to get 25 doors as rentals and to do these wholesales and these renovation flips? How are you driving in the business?
Yeah. So great question. We've done a lot of testing on what types of marketing we like. Right now, I would say our bread and butter that we love is mail. We do a lot of direct mail. We go from anything from postcards to handwritten letters. And that's just kind of like our go-to. We're always going to do it. I think you had a podcast recently, Riches in the Niches, right? I mean, that is where most of our deals come from. And we focus on the niches because like we know all the wholesalers in town, there's quite a few of them. And like, we are rarely competing with them on deals because we're in the niches really deep. But what we also do is we don't just go out and get data. We have our VA scrubbing like data before. So we get a lot of our data from PropStream. We get it before PropStream gets it, right? Because we're out there scraping the county records and doing it right when it hits. If it every week, if it hits, like we're adding that to our list and we're mailing it. We do cold calling. We're playing around with several different types. We've done it in-house. We've hired services. In our local market, we haven't had like great luck with cold calling, or it's kind of ebbed and flowed, and recently it's gotten bad. But as we scale into more virtual markets, we're probably going to start our own call center just for our team. We're going to build that out. We've got some great folks that we think can manage that for us and kind of handle that, because cold calling, I mean, you can hit a lot over a good amount of time. And if you get some people on the phone that can slay, like you can do really well with that.
Yeah.
We don't do texting or anything like that. Just for us, the laws and changing, and we've been trying to focus on some of our other areas. So we don't really do that, but we do, you know, pay-per-click, Facebook. And when you get a Google or Facebook lead, I mean, it's like hit it right Sunday night, call those people right now. I don't care. Yeah. And get those. Yes. Those trickle in and those are amazing. We love them. They're great softball leads. What else are we doing? We don't do TV and radio. We've had some friends in our local market that have done it and just really it's flopped here. And so I know people that are really successful at it, right? But that's just not where we've gone yet with the markets we're in. And it's because sometimes I think it is market dependent, what type of marketing you're using that works the best.
Yeah.
But I would say definitely mail, cold calling, and making sure our data is high quality and that we're getting it before everybody else.
How much a month are you guys putting out for marketing right now?
Right now, I think we're probably dropping around on average 7 to 10,000 a month. And the great thing about like mail marketing is that like if you spend more, you're going to get more leads. Honestly, like it's really one for one almost. I mean, not one for one, but like that's what we found. And we're scaling up, like we're just scaling back up to that. We've definitely dropped some big mail and not had the systems in place, and you just waste leads.
Yeah.
And that was another thing to talk about too, what we found with cold calling. So we're dropping mail and we were like spinning up big, you know, lots of cold calling. And the cold calling leads are harder to deal with compared to like a mail lead. They're coming to you. And so our ACK managers were going through all of these, you know, cold call leads, and they'd get to a mail lead, which is more costly, but a better lead. And they'd be worn out from getting told to piss off all day from these cold call leads that just weren't that great. And so that's what we turned cold calling off for a little bit to really kind of get our mail dialed in, get our ACK manager dialed in. And now we're again, spinning it back up with a better system to intake those types of leads.
Where are you predominantly mailing? Is it Washington?
Yeah. So we mail our home market, which is Spokane. We do North Idaho. We do kind of that region, Eastern Washington, North Idaho. And now where we've sent our first full batch of mailers out not too long ago in Knoxville, Tennessee. That's our second market. So
that's your virtual market that you go into.
Yep.
I want to get into that in a second. I just want to speak about what's your call ratio? Like what's your percentage of mailers versus calls that are coming in? Is it 1%, 1.5%?
Oh, response rate on our mailers. Yeah. So depending on which mailers we're doing, which list, but we can get up to like 2-2.5% on mailers. Yeah. Yeah. On some of the real niche down lists. I mean, that's not the full $10,000 and, you know, mailers.
So that's in certain little niches that you're hitting.
Exactly. But a lot of our stuff is niche. And so like we once in a while we'll pull something from absentee owner, which is good. But if it's absentee owner, as you stack the list down, that's where we're really killing it. And we can get some good response rates. And that what I just quoted on that was actually from a new mailer that we got that had actually like a price quote on it. And like, we got a really good response rate on that one.
So let's talk about that. Cause we've had campaigns where we had killer response rates and then our closing ratio absolutely sucked.
Sure.
Because the response was like, I don't want to say it was misleading, but it was to a point where it got the phone to ring, but to actually convert those leads over was hard as hell. So are you actually converting the people that are coming in at the 2-2.5% response rate?
Right now in that market, we're now converting them, but that's these leads 60, 90 days later. And now, you know, looking at our CRM, we've got tons of offer made stacked up and contracts out to these people. So I think a big portion of those, actually, we didn't think we would convert a lot, but I think we're now, it's like catching up, right? Because you know, just because you get a call in 1 week doesn't mean you're closing in that same month, right? Yeah. We found a 60, 90 day is like a good close rate, but we have some that are, you know, 120 days. So more to come on that. But yeah, we from what I can see in our CRM, I feel pretty confident we're going to close on quite a few more than we would have thought.
And most of these, if not all, are going to be wholesale type deals.
Yeah. We have, we have one right now that's actually just sold. That was a JV flip in our virtual market, which worked great. And that was with somebody that we had met in our mastermind, that are kind of in an adjacent market. And so we helped, they brought the labor and money and we brought the deal. And so that worked out really, really well. But for the most part right now, we're just going to do virtual. It'll be wholesale.
And what's your average wholesale fee on these virtual deals?
So right now I think we're in about 12,000 to 14,000, but our cost per deal is like 1200. It's so cheap.
Wow. Yeah. That's cheap, man.
Yes. It's mind blowing.
It's like 5,500 to 6,000 per deal.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I believe it. Like, you know, in our home market, it's like around 32 to 3,500. And so we're like, man, maybe we need to, that's when we tested the market virtually and we're like, okay, maybe we need to start going. That's where we want to sit, have me stand up our second team down, our sales team down there, and actually start doing that full time. Cause we're like, the people way nicer than our home market, better deals, lower cost per deal. And it's easier, honestly, cause you don't feel the tie to your market locally. It's easier to just kind of separate yourself from the property.
So I want to get into this now, cause you're speaking about virtual wholesaling, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
First off, how did you decide on a market to hit? Take the listeners through that process.
Yeah. So I think we probably overanalyzed it a little bit, but what we did was we kind of looked at, we did a lot of quantitative and a little bit of qualitative. So we wanted to avoid some of the big metros, Phoenix, for example, or we just weren't going to go to any of those big giant metros and compete there. So we wanted kind of an off the beat path. We were looking for like 250 to 500,000 population. We looked at growth rates. We looked at unemployment rates. What else did we look at? I think those are kind of the main ones we looked at. And we did still want it to be near a large area. So we weren't trying to go in the middle of nowhere just because they had 250,000 people. Right. But anyhow, so we got it down to like 40 possible counties that we could go to. Then we looked at some of the state laws throughout a handful. Where wholesaling would be challenging. And then we just got to kind of like our top three. I think one of them was in like South Carolina. One of them was Knoxville. And like, we're like, let's just go with it. Like, we kind of think that's a good place. You know, it's kind of close to Nashville and, you know, all these sorts of things. That was the more of the qualitative feel and just saying, stop analyzing. This looks good. Yeah. So.
And then how did you go about understanding your team, understanding how to make offers virtually? Take a listen to that.
Yeah. So that one is where it almost felt easier because you just don't know what you don't know at first. So what we knew we had to do is get some boots on the ground. We had to find some people to actually walk the properties, at least take pictures of them so that we're not completely just sight unseen. And so now we have a couple guys down there. We went through a couple different folks that didn't really work out. We have a couple guys down there now. We pay them like $75 to walk it and they do great. They take pictures of any damages or major things. They're local. They do a really good job. And then we literally just do a virtual. Our ACT manager calls them up. We will do the pricing. My partner and I will do the pricing on the property. And we'll usually do a range for the first call and then feel them out. And then we'll give them their max offer after that they can work with. Our ACT manager will work off of a max offer. And he's incentivized to get it below the MAO. But do it all over the phone. And then the clients down there will either want a mailed contract. So it's a little longer closing if we have to mail it back and forth. Others will just send it out digitally and they'll sign the contract. We got a local closing agent, drop it off to, they get it all and it works.
I love it. I love virtual wholesaling. How do you go about selling the properties after you have them locked up in the contract? Take the listeners through that.
Yeah. So fortunately, at least for us in Knoxville, there's a pretty active investor group. So first thing we did when we picked it, joined all the Facebook groups. There was like three Facebook groups for that area, for like East Tennessee, Knoxville kind of area. And obviously scrape that. They actually just have a list that they produce because they get tired of people posting like, who's my buyers out there? So they just have a list. You can just scrape it. So we have that. And then we've just been blasting in the Facebook groups with like awesome response rates, like really good. There's a risk because you don't necessarily know the buyers yet. Like locally in our market, like we have some really great buyers that we have vetted that we know, like, hey, if they want it, they're going to close. So yep. There's a little bit more risk, perceived risk on our end that we don't necessarily know all the buyers yet, but we're going to, that you'll build that over time. Like if somebody screws you over on closing, you're probably not going to go to them next time. Sure. But that guy that closes every time, you know, you just send it to that person and those types of people tend to close all the time.
Are you having the buyers go into the property, like a mini open house type thing, visit the property? What is that?
Yeah. So we depend, it always depends on the seller, right? Depending on the situation, but yeah, we can have them walk it if they want. Typically we got the Google Drive with all the photos. And if you're getting serious people typically that are in the area and they know it, that's walking the properties. Honestly, even locally, we rarely have people walk properties.
Wow. Good for you, man. I love it. This was actually, you gave a lot of good content for the, for the listeners out there. You took them through the whole gamut.
Yeah.
The next thing is I'm going to get you back on when you quit your damn
right. Yeah. Yeah. We'll have some champagne.
I mean, that's the next move for you. And I'm excited. Yeah. I'm excited for you and your partner. You guys are doing some really good things. If people want to look you up, connect with you in your area, how can they go about finding you?
Yeah. Instagram. Just hit me up. Investor Man Dan. That's me. You can
DM. Investor Man.
Yeah. That's me, man. Just hit me up. I got a website too. Same thing. Investormandan.com. Hit me up. If you just want to chat, if you have questions about anything I talked about today, or, you know, I'm happy to give you some mentoring coaching. Just hit me up.
Awesome, brother. I really appreciate you coming on. I'm going to keep you in my Rolodex. You and I are definitely going to get to know each other a little bit more than just this show.
And awesome.
It was great having you on, bro.
Love it. Thanks, Billy. I appreciate it.
Yeah, bro. Yeah, absolutely. Right. Take care, everybody.
Yep. Yeah.